hello. You are listening to the Sleon Productions podcast, where we interview entrepreneurs, innovators, authors, people that give value, also inspire us to give success. In this episode, we are interviewing Horma Miller from a interesting company that transcribes live captioning in events and also virtual events. She is the president of Hype Code Captioning, and we got Norma on the line. Welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Pleasure. So Norma, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am the owner of White Coat Captioning, a small specialist captioning company, and I live in Vermont. I've been doing my company is about 6.5 years old, but I've been doing this sort of work in one iteration or another for maybe the audience should sit down, but for 40 years I've been doing this kind of work.
Yes, I first encountered you and your team at WordCamp Miami about 2 years ago. And when I first saw the whole white captioning and the live transcribing, it really like inspired me and motivated me, you know, as well, because there are times when you're in meetings or you're in conferences that you kind of miss what that person said. Either you were thinking about something else or you got distracted on your phone. But tell us, how did you, you know, get started with this company, and why did you do it?
So this sort of work comes, sort of grows out of the field of court reporting. We have the same skill, the same basic technology that court reporters have, and that's my original career. And in the mid-90s, I was recruited by BBC Television in London to become retrained as a television captioner. So that's how I got going in captioning, sort of broke off the field of court reporting, became a captioner. Then I came back to the United States, and the technology hadn't really caught up with us yet for me to be able to stay in Vermont. I could have moved to large metropolitan areas and become a television captioner in the US, but that wasn't really feasible for my family situation. So I sort of hung around and did some more freelance court reporting type stuff until the world caught up with me, I guess. The technology caught up with me. And then when the internet got more expanded and things became easier and faster, and audio supplies became better, and it was feasible then to do remote captioning from home. So I started this company in 2014 and started it specifically with the idea of specializing in very difficult jargon sectors. So my first intention and the reason for the name White Coat Captioning is our intention was to specialize in medical captioning for medical school. There was a great need at that point. The Americans with Disabilities Act had been around for a good number of years at that point. So people with hearing loss had been accommodated all through school and undergrad, and many of them then were now looking to go to medical school, and they needed captioning for medical school. So that was the intention, and it still is very, very much a part of our business. But very shortly thereafter, the tech world, tech conferences discovered us, and then sort of by word of mouth, I mean, we did our first one and it was a huge hit, and then it was this wonderful exponential organic growth thing where people who were at that conference, you know, kept telling other people, and also some of those people were organizing their own conferences, and so that's we ended up now taking going down the road of tech, and really at this point the tech has almost eclipsed the medical, but there's still two very big strong arms of our business.
Why do you think tech is so very interested with your services? Why do you think tech was very attractive for that?
I think there are like there would be this massive Venn diagram with lots of bubbles having to do with, let's face it, number one is that tech has the money to pay for the service. They do seem to have, overall, they have, and of course, disability rights activists might disagree with this a little bit, but as a sector, they seem like they are eager to provide accommodation for people who need it, and they're willing to make the investment. But of course, that comes out of the fact that they do have the money, so that's great. There's a large whole component of people that are using captioning because English is not their first language. And that sort of has become revealed through this whole tech thing. You know, the giant audiences in a tech conference are international, and everyone in the audience pretty much knows English and speaks English, but they can read English better oftentimes than they can hear it being delivered, especially with all the various accents and such. So you have, you know, someone who is Italian in the audience, for example, and they are bilingual or multilingual already, but they then the person who's giving the talk is giving the talk in accented English, maybe from Japan. And so because we are very much trained listeners, we're listening more for the words than the content. So we can get out the words, and because we are different focused kind of listeners, so that helps the entire audience make it a very even playing field for everyone. And it's very, very enthusiastically received.
Yeah, that's something that I was realizing when I was in work camp and also with my family. My parents are from Colombia. And my dad always turns on captions when he watches TV and like everywhere. And also at work camp, you know, people like I could just understand and comprehend what the speaker is saying. Now, it could be because of the accents are different or because they talk too fast.
Or other distractions going on in the room. I mean, in Miami in particular, there were people, doors were slamming and people were walking in and out and that sort of thing, which makes our job challenging as well if we don't, you know, if we don't have like noise canceling headphones on and such. But
yeah, which is, you know, you bring confirmation that you found that one group of people that will need that captioning. You know, not just for people, you know, with any type of disabilities. So it's quite interesting the interesting situation that you found while starting this business. And that's the best part about business is that sometimes you discover new things. Oh, wait, this could go here and it works. So.
Totally. I mean, when you gave your introduction in the introduction to your podcast and you mentioned entrepreneurs and business people and people who add value, and I can't remember the other things, but I'm going, yeah, I think I tick all those boxes, and that makes me feel so great.
That's why you're here.
And it's wonderful too to hear like someone like you, because every person like you who's in all those audiences that we encounter become our advocates and advocates for the service, which warms my heart, because many of my deaf consumers have to struggle so hard to get accommodations. And so they have to fight so hard. And when they go to like conference organizers, they're often met with an answer of like, well, we're getting sign language. And the person goes, but I don't know sign language. And so there's like this lack of understanding that there's all kinds of deafness, and it's on a spectrum, and some deaf people know sign language and prefer sign language, and some people use and prefer captioning. So.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. And as you know, which we spoke about WordCamp. WordCamp is a WordPress conference. Tell us your relationship with WordPress and how did it get started?
So, it all started with a WordCamp in New York City. It was there was the need was identified. They'd had somebody request it the previous year and provide it only for that one person. And then I think they realized, wow, this should be for everybody. And also, if it's a multi-track conference, sometimes and sometimes if budget is an issue, we might encourage we even work with conference organizers and say, well, if you can't afford us for the whole thing, at least have us for the main track or whatever. But then, of course, that is it puts the deaf consumer at a disadvantage because that means they're stuck in that one track. They can't move around. So the following year, the organizer expanded the desire, and so. It was Kevin Cristiano who was the organizer that year in WordCamp New York. And then it grew from there. That it was so popular at that one, and then they talked it up, and then the next thing we were doing all kinds of WordCamps all across the country, and then WordCamp US, and it continues to this day. We've been doing some of the online WordCamps, and actually just did a thing for WordCamp US, the event that happened last week, I think it was. I don't know. I've lost track of time. This has been such a year for all of us, right? And then the past few days have been so, thank goodness it's to you're having this podcast today and not 2 days ago,
Oh,
because
good timing.
yeah.
And which you just brought up about having, events online. Tell us how's that been this past couple of months with the whole pandemic, and how is it different from an actual event?
Well, thankfully for us, that I think maybe the most popular word of 2020 is the word pivot, right? People have had to pivot in every aspect of their lives to the online space. And so for us, luckily, we already had a very experienced, I started this company just as a remote captioning company. So we already had very, very much of an online presence and also experience, and so we could help guide people to work with in the online space. And so it's been different for sure. When the pandemic first happened, by the way, sentimental favorite Miami WordCamp because it was our very, very, very last in-person event this past year. We all flew home, and then we were all on lockdown, like pretty much immediately
Yeah,
after that.
we were right at the edge
Right
edge of
at
that. I
the
think it's a
cusp.
week later, like everything was
Totally.
closed. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, sentimental favorite will always be Miami for that. And I'm always like on Facebook putting up photos saying, "Well, this was our last." We all get sort of tearful, and it's very poignant. But this was our very last on-site event. Well, last. But hopefully not last. We're hoping to get back there someday. But anyway, I literally teared up here. What I forgot. Now I got
Oh
off
yes,
track.
how is like the whole
Oh, the
online virtual
online thing.
events versus the
Yeah.
in-person?
So when the pandemic, hit, or when we realized it hit, I had, I think 200 cancellations in one day. And I thought, oh my goodness, my company is going to not make it through this. But then very, very shortly thereafter, like almost immediately, it just shifted to just all kinds of online events. And it's much more admin heavy to manage because it tends like the online events tend to be shorter. And more of them and different, So in terms of the trying to manage the business around that has been a challenge. But we've risen to the challenge, and my team has been amazing. I've expanded my team. I'm probably one of the few companies in the country that, in a way, I've sort of benefited from the pandemic, which makes me feel a little bit, I don't feel happy saying that, but the need for captioning has just been exponentially greater because all the classrooms have gone online, and people who actually a lot of sort of unidentified or underidentified, or I'm not really sure how to characterize this group of people, but people who didn't realize that they were doing a lot of lip reading in the normal classroom, for example, or they've realized that they can't lip read on Zoom very well, and so there's been a lot, just a huge increase in that sort of cohort of folks who need captioning.
Tell us about your team. What are the requirements if they want to caption a event? What are the needs? Because I know that I was speaking to one of them and they went to school for that. So can
Yeah.
you tell us what is the process for that?
There is a schooling to learn the theory, what we call the theory. Very much what we do is similar to becoming. I always like to analogize it to being a professional musician. You have to learn, and also, a language person. So you have to learn the language, the steno language, which is a code. It's a stenographic code. It's sort of like you can think a little bit about it too, like the World War II code breakers in a way. In other words, we have to learn the language just like tech code is being written, right? We learn this language, then we have to become faster and more accurate and get to a certain level. So yeah, there are. I went to a brick and mortar school. There are very few brick and mortar schools left, but there's lots of online schools. You have to learn the steno language. You have to become proficient at it, and then to become employed at White Coat Captioning and to do tech conferences and such, you have to have years of experience at the highest level, and because of the jargon and the fast delivery of speakers and that sort of thing. So it's very challenging to learn. I have always said that I believe from the very beginning when I first learned it, that you either, it's more like an aptitude thing. You kind of either can do it or you can't. There's people who go to school and try and try and try and try, and they're like still in school after 10 years, and their parents and their friends are saying, "When are you going to finish school?" And the answer is, "I'm going to finish when I'm finished." Like basically, when you get to a certain level of proficiency, so that you can be good enough, and that's so some people can do that in 18 months, and some people take many, many years, and so you either kind of have the talent or you don't. And it's the kind of thing where you have to practice all the time. It is very, very similar to being a professional musician, like a concert pianist or something. Yeah.
I
So
was.
it is extremely small, niche field. A lot of people don't have any idea that it exists, but it's a really great field. It's a really great job.
Which I actually was doing research of that a couple months ago, and yeah, you're right. It's a whole different language you got to learn and get a degree in certification, and yeah, it was like I thought you just had to listen. Da, 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 da. No.
I can't
Also,
tell you the number of people who say, "I'm a really fast typist. Can I join your company?" And I just go, not typing.
with the technology, I was doing research that the keyboard you guys use is completely different. Tell us about that.
Right. Yes. I know that we're on a podcast, so there's no video, but just for you personally, you saw our machines when you were there, so you
Yeah.
know. Already. Yes, it's a specialized keyboard, and it's what we call a corded keyboard. So we're writing chords. Instead of typing out a word letter by letter, like even the word same, SAME, right? That's four strokes if you're typing it on a QWERTY keyboard. It's one stroke, one chord, if you stroke it on our steno keyboards. And sometimes even groups of words in one stroke, phrases that are used often. We make our own dictionaries. Each person, it's very personalized. Each person has their own dictionary. Like, we learn a basic language and then we make it our own over time. Again, very similar to a concert pianist, right? Like, one person can play a piece of music from sheet music and it'll sound one way and you kind of recognize the tune, but then, you know, like a real master would be, it sounds different, right? And so I keep using that analogy, but it's really the most apt one. So over time, so all the domain languages, you know, we caption. I haven't checked the stats for 2020, but in 2019, we captioned in my company 159 tech conferences in 1 year. So that's almost one every other day, or more than that. And then, you know, all the other stuff that we do as well. So we caption in WordPress and Rust and Ruby and, you know, you name it. All the various languages, we just have to learn the jargon. We don't understand what y'all are talking about necessarily, but
yeah,
let me get the words.
Yeah, I know, exactly. That's something that with tech is a whole different language. For yourself and also for your team, what other type of setup do you guys do to get comfortable? Obviously, I was talking to before the show that one of them that I was talking to had like a microphone so they can listen to the speaker. What other techniques or setups your team uses to get yourself comfortable to make sure every word is correct?
Everything. We do whatever prep ahead of time we can do. We always ask the organizers, but let's be fair, they only get a C minus in actual follow through on this. But we always ask for as much prep as we can get. Like, we like to see the slides ahead of time if possible. We don't often get that very much, but we try. But if we know, okay, so it's WordCamp Miami. We know that's coming up. We check the website. We are able to get all the names of the people. We kind of like do mining of the internet. In other words, like, so if we find out, okay, all of a sudden, I'm going to suddenly do a conference on, I don't know, some, pick a thing, or Elm, the Elm language. And so it's the first time we've ever done that. So we mine the internet for words. And even it's always an interesting thing that kind of some interesting things that kind of set White Coat Captioning apart from the others is that sort of research that we do. Like, for example, you never know. You might think you've prepped as much as you can possibly prep, and then all of a sudden somebody mentions the first inventor of that language, and nobody, you know, like a regular, average people on the street don't know who that is, right? So all of a sudden, so that name will come out. Or like for a WordCamp, WAPU comes out. And, you know, if you're just somebody, any old captioner off the street, you wouldn't have a clue what that was. So that's sort of one thing that we do. We do the focused listening, like as best we can, if we can get a microphone on the speaker, or in actually Zoom or Skype makes that quite easy. That we're, in a way, we're kind of thrilled about that turn of events. But we put noise canceling headset on because all the ruckus around us, we can kind of, just put out of our heads. We do that sort of preparation. We constantly practice. We make friends with people in those industries, you know, like yourself, like people that we, when we're on site, especially, it's just good to talk to people and get to learn more and make it more than just sort of a job. When we're at home, we have these, now that we're all online, we all have the best setups that we can possibly have. Like I have a 49-inch monitor, and I can have like multiple things on my screen. I can pull up Google if I want, so that I can Google a word real quick. It's not often possible when people are talking at 250 words a minute and you're trying to get all the words, but things like that. It always helps to have eyes on the thing, to have the visual of the person speaking, and to be able to see the slides. Of course, ergonomics. But when we're on site, we sort of take whatever chair that is there. But when we're at home, we all have, you know, our nice, good setups that are comfortable and ergonomic for us. I think those are pretty much it.
That's interesting. Google always has to be involved to do some research work, just in case.
Could be some other search engine, but I default to Google.
And what is your future plans for the company for the next year?
One of the things that I've always done from the very beginning is to make sure to control the growth. We are exponentially, right now we're in a period of exponential demand. But we are very, my company is a small company, focused company, and I intend to keep it that way. I could just start taking every job and expand my team to that size, but I would not be able to maintain the quality. So quality control is a huge, that's what my brand is. My brand, I claim to be the best, and that I only hire the best, and I really mean that. And so controlling the growth is a thing that's happened to us in the last year. I've had to, last several months, on average, turned away about 6 clients per week, saying we don't have the coverage, or we can't take this on because we already are too busy in, in that time frame, whatever. And I'm able to curate my clients list, which is lovely, because so you can if clients are problematic in some way, which we all know can happen. We are thankfully in the position of being able to say, well, maybe we're not quite the right captioning company for you. So that's pretty much it. I'm trying to expand carefully while maintaining the high quality that we're known for.
We're coming to a close. Norma, what is the best way for people to reach you about your services, to find out more about you and your company, White Coat Captioning?
Well, I'd love it if you followed me on Twitter at White Coat Captioning, and it's spelled a little strangely at the end. The captioning is shortened to CAPXG, so White Coat Captioning spelled that way. I have a website, of course, and there's contact forms on the website. It's whitecoatcaptioning.com, and I also have a UK branch of my business, so whatever the domain ending is there, .co.uk or .uk.co. I can never remember which one.
.co.uk, yeah.
Yeah, by email, I'm norma@whitecoatcaptioning.com.
Definitely, if you are going to WordCamp, you might see them there. So, and just wave hello. They're just not just captioning; they're also trying to meet other people as well. I've met most of your team. They're all nice, very approachable. Their service is, just amazing. Definitely, if you're, not just because you're not listening, maybe because if you want to take notes. If the speaker said anything, it's probably there in the screen when you see the caption. So it's definitely a huge benefit. You've been a very inspiration to the tech community for the WordPress. And I'm glad you came on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.